This is CBS News on the Hour, presented by Indeed.com.
I'm Jennifer Kuiper in Chicago. A heat wave in the West has many cities breaking their all-time records for high temperatures. CBS meteorologist David Parkinson.
All in all, we've got heat alerts for more than 100 million people across the South and West, with places like Arizona, California, and Nevada being ground zero for the most dangerous heat.
It will be an especially busy weekend for many of the nation's first responders.
More than 100 million Americans head into the weekend facing excessive heat warnings and advisories. First responders will be busy handling heat-related illness calls.
People will say they started to feel dizzy, they started to feel faint, their heart started racing, or they passed out. Those are the things that we really see, and then we find that they're related to, you know, heat exhaustion or potentially heat stroke.
Damon Schilling is with AMR, which provides paramedic and ambulance services in greater Las Vegas. Jim Crisilla, CBS News.
An architect on New York's Long Island has been arrested and charged with three of the Gilgo Beach murders a decade ago. The suspect is 59-year-old Rex Huerman, Suffolk County DA Raymond Tierney.
We're continuing to execute search warrants, and we anticipate getting more evidence.
Today, Huerman was charged with murder in the deaths of three women and is the prime suspect of another victim whose bodies were first discovered on Long Island in 2010. The women, all sex workers, were found wrapped in burlap bags.
That's CBS's Meg Oliver reporting. Hollywood actors walk the picket line instead of the red carpet. The entire industry is shut down, with actors and writers on strike together for the first time in more than 60 years. CBS's Marcy Gonzalez.
In New York, film and TV production employs 185,000 people. In Georgia, the industry brings in nearly $4.5 billion in direct spending. And in California, it provides 600,000 jobs and $70 billion in wages. Production has now halted on several film projects, including sequels to franchises like Deadpool, Venom, and Gladiator.
UPS says it's going to train non-union employees in the U.S. to do the work of union workers if they go on strike at the end of the month. Contract talks have broken down. Longtime Orlando, Florida area UPS driver Chris Lulin.
3 years ago, we were heroes and essential workers, and now they can't seem to find money to take care of us and our part-timers. It's a big issue. The part-timers are not making enough money.
Tonight's Mega Millions jackpot is $560 million. Tomorrow's Powerball is up to $875 million, and it has some people dreaming about what they'd do if they win, like Brenda Sepulveda of Ambler, Pennsylvania.
I would pay off my student loans, help pay my mom's car off, my car off, and I don't know, probably invest it into my, if I go to law school.
This is CBS News.
Find great hires fast with Indeed. Their end-to-end hiring solution makes it easy to attract, interview, and hire candidates all in the same place. Visit Indeed.com/credit.
Wendy's is civic media radio stations, providing your news, conversations, and fun you won't find anywhere else.
For WCFW and 93.5 Tap FM, I'm Jimmy Cuska. Here's what you need to know in the Chippewa Valley. A Chippewa Falls man is charged with 15 felonies after leading law enforcement on multiple chases in Washburn and Burnett counties last month. 50-year-old Chad Rollins received several recklessly endangering safety charges after leading deputies on a chase that reached speeds of 95 miles per hour, at one point going through a campground. He was arrested on June 26. The DNR has issued an air quality advisory statewide for Canadian wildfire smoke. The advisory goes through noon on Sunday. Wildfire smoke arrives in northwestern Wisconsin this afternoon and evening. The DNR said that the air quality will be unhealthy for people with medical conditions, but it won't be as bad as last month, which brought some of the worst air quality to the state in over a decade. Barron County officials said a rabies-infected bat was found in the county. It's the first confirmed case of rabies in an animal in Barron County since 2019. Officials said that you shouldn't go near wild animals, especially if they're not acting normally. If you do get bitten or scratched, wash the wound out right away with soap and water for 10 to 15 minutes. For Civic Media News, I'm Jimmy Cuska.
As Goes Wisconsin with Kristen Bry.
What is the grand prize? Is it a fabulous cash prize?
You definitely get to take home the cheese. I know that.
I hope so. Humans aren't necessarily logical creatures. Maybe it is.
Thrill-seeking.
It's the thrill of the cheese and the bragging rights.
The first person across the line wins and gets to keep the cheese.
And that's it.
And I think that's it.
As Goes Wisconsin with host Kristen Bry. Weekdays 10 till noon on your local Civic Media radio station and on the Civic Media app. Radio keeps your community informed, entertained, and connected. It's what we're all about at the Civic Media Network of local radio stations.
We're having fun and moving fast to preserve hometown radio across Wisconsin.
This includes a commitment to news.
Now we want to invite you to join Civic Media's exclusive Facebook group, Wisconsin Breaking News. It's a place to share your community's news and chat with others from across the state about it.
Join the Facebook group, Wisconsin Breaking News, today. It's the perfect companion to your local Civic Media radio station.
Tired of hearing only one side of the story? Do you want news and information from people who, like you, know what it's like to work hard every day and still struggle to make ends meet? Then tune in to The Rick Smith Show every weeknight from 8 to 10 p.m. right here on the Civic Media Radio Network. Be part of the conversation. Tune in, turn on, and take back the American dream. The Rick Smith Show, where working people come to talk.
Hey, son, how are you feeling?
I'm fine, Pops.
What's on your mind?
I can't explain it.
When your kid can't find the language, find the lyrics. Start a conversation at soundedouttogether.org. Brought to you by Ad Council and Pivotal Ventures.
Conversation with somebody about it. We need to be talking about it more. All these things actually have an impact.
Yes, they do. Talk to everyone you know about it. Drive them crazy, just the way we drive you crazy. For much more on all of these stories and the ones we couldn't get to today, check out our website at greennews.bradblog.com.
Are you tired of think tank approved corporate news and commentary? Are you tired of CEOs telling you what to think, who to hate, and who to vote for? Well, welcome to the Rick Smith Show. We don't take orders from some boardroom, and we don't do focus groups or talking points. We don't work for them, and we never will. I'm Rick Smith, and I work for you. Join us daily at thericksmithshow.com and download the podcast and never miss a minute.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
Welcome back to Chicago as we cover day two of the Netroots Nation powwow. Check out the website, netroots.org. We'll get links out on social media. But you know, the thing that I love about here is the idea of voting. Everyone's got to get out and vote. You want to change things? You can come, you can protest, you can have all of these wonderful powwows. You get people all fired up, active, ready to go and do all that stuff. Not going to mean anything if you don't get to the ballot box and start throwing some of these bums out. And one of the places, you know, like in my state of Pennsylvania, when Josh Shapiro was the attorney general, went after the bad guys. And the idea of using our government to make lives better, kind of important. And the attorney general spot, one of those extremely important things. And look, the one thing that I've been saying for a long time, what Trump and conservatives have done made us learn about government. What it does, what it should be doing, and what we should want it to do. And that's why I'm sitting here with Elad Gross. He is a civil rights attorney, government transparent advocate, and also a leader in expanding civic engagement, but also candidate for attorney general in Missouri, the show me state. Elad, thanks for taking time for me.
Oh, absolutely. No, thanks for having me. Thanks for being here.
Yeah, so walk me through. Why do you want to jump in the middle of any of this stuff? I ask, this is always the first question for people who become candidates. Why? Why do you want to do this to yourself?
Oh, man. I mean, it's a lot of work, absolutely. But I'm a lifelong Missourian. I love my state. And we've done some great things in Missouri. And I'm really excited about the opportunity we have from the Attorney General's office. So I'm a former employee there. I used to be an Assistant Attorney General of Missouri. Some of the proudest moments of my legal career have been representing the people of our state. And our current guy sucks. We got to get a new one. So I've been working real hard on that.
I got to be honest, a lot of your current guys suck.
Yeah, I know.
I mean, you got Josh Hawley, horrible.
Yeah, not great.
You got Schmidt, horrible.
Yeah.
You got a lot of horrible in the show me state.
Yeah, we've taken a little turn.
You've shown us crazy.
Yeah, it's could be better. I mean, you know, right now we're going through a tough time as a state. I think there are folks who have taken power and have taken advantage of a lot of folks. They have sold a bill of goods that's not accurate at all. But we've been vote. I mean, when we go out to vote, Missourians are choosing, for example, to fight this right to work crap that is trying to be forced down our throats right now. We've expanded Medicaid. We've done all the things that we want to do, but unfortunately our government has been captured by people with interests outside of the people of Missouri right now.
No, and this is why, again, positions like attorney general are so important. And I guess the current guy is now going after Target because they're selling things that I guess I actually don't get that whole argument.
No.
I know it's about feeding outrage candy to the
right.
to the dim. I know it's getting them all bunched up in the panties and angry. But exactly what does it mean in the big picture?
Yeah, no, I mean nothing. So what we have right now from our current attorney general, his name is Andrew Bailey. He thinks that he's got all the power in the world. So right now he's exactly right. He's threatening to sue Target for selling Pride merchandise. He is threatening to sue schools that have any kind of scholarship programs for minority folks. He's doing this to private businesses too. I mean, the guy is like anybody else in power who's not good at their job. They want to keep us divided so that way we're not looking at them and asking questions about what have you done for us. I mean, just yesterday, I was a little delayed getting here. I was supposed to be here yesterday, but we had a press conference on nuclear radioactive waste that's been concealed from the public in St. Louis since 1949. And other states where this has happened, guess who's right at the forefront of pushing for transparency, making sure that we have our rights protected? It's the attorney general. This just happened in Washington state, and our attorney general was nowhere to be found at this conference. He's had these records for a long time, and he's assigned one attorney from his office of 200 plus to investigate and look into it. I mean, he's not doing the actual job he's been chosen to do. He's not even elected. He's an appointed guy, just like so many of our other state officials. But he's not doing the job he's supposed to do, and he's trying to keep us divided so we're not asking those questions of him. What are we paying for?
Yeah, this is the thing that bothers me. You get people who are ideological hacks who get into these positions, and now we're going to go after the outrage of the day.
Yes.
You know, we're going to follow the talk radio model. We're going to make the attorney general go, and we're going to go after those people instead of doing what the job is supposed to do, which is protect the people. And again, I go back to the guy who was attorney general in Pennsylvania, Josh Shapiro, mm-hmm. now our governor, fortunately.
Right.
But he went after making workers' lives better, going after misclassification, going after wage theft, going after things that are going to help working people. Look, I get going after corporate America.
Yeah.
But I don't over the product that they put on the. I got a problem with that.
No, you're exactly right. I mean, right now, like I've been talking about wage theft. This is great. I mean, I've been talking about wage theft and obviously right to work. They're still trying to push in Missouri despite the votes that we've had on it already. But they're going after working people in Missouri. And one of the big proposals that I have is to start Missouri's first civil rights division in the history of our state. We don't have one. They'd probably have to sue themselves if they started one, and that's probably why we don't have one right now. But we need to protect folks in housing, folks from discrimination, folks on the job. And our attorney general's not interested in doing that. And when we talk about corporations and lawsuits there, I mean, we have massive privacy violations right now where folks are collecting huge amounts of data on us and not telling us. We have massive corporate consolidation and monopolies that are springing up. So that's screwing workers over, screwing consumers over too. And that's the office that's supposed to be dealing with that. We're supposed to be policing these people who have bad intentions and are exploiting our state. And instead, right now, there are a lot of out-of-state companies that are coming to Missouri to extract as much as they can from us, and they know that there's no attorney general there to stop them. It's very sad to see.
No, I'm glad you brought up the idea of taking on consolidation, because it's something that, for decades I've been screaming about. The monopolization of our economy is not good for working people.
Right.
But we get cheap stuff. No, you may get something cheap now, but you got crappy wages. You can't afford the cheap stuff.
Exactly. Yeah.
At some point, the question becomes, are you a worker first or a consumer first?
Right.
And we've been sold that we're all consumers.
Yes.
Only.
Yes.
And that's got to change, I think.
Yeah, I 100% agree. So I'm big in buying Made in America. Our campaign, obviously, is very big union production, too. But, yeah, you're totally right. I mean, we've cheapened the base of the United States, and that's why you see a lot of industrial production left our country. There's a lot of talk about offshoring this and outsourcing that instead of building it right here. And I think we have an opportunity, especially in Missouri. There are a lot of folks who support local production. We have a lot of areas for folks to produce things, and I think we need to make it easier, especially for small businesses, to get started and have support to do that, because we got a lot of space, we got a lot of opportunity in Missouri. We just have terrible leadership right now, and that's what's holding us back.
No, I mean, there's a lot of there's so much. And as I said at the beginning, you know, the one thing that the Trump era has brought us is understanding that government is important, especially especially local government. Offices like that, like attorney general or auditor general, or you know the treasurer,
right.
You know, those positions that the left never cared about. You know, it's always the presidential or the big Senate races.
Yeah.
It's never the boring kind of what used to be thought of as you know, the row offices that it's no big deal.
Yeah.
Those are the really important ones.
Yeah.
That's what affects your life every single day.
Yes, you're exactly right. And in many states, including Missouri, and I'm sure in Pennsylvania too, the attorney general is elected separately from the governor. So on the federal level, most people are, you know, familiar with that. You've got a president, you have an executive branch, and the president is making appointments in that branch. In many of our states, that's not true. It is actually a divided executive. And that's because the checks and balances that we all learn about, they also apply within that executive branch too. So the attorney general, our current one, used to be the lawyer for the governor. He actually fought me in court on transparency. I've been protecting Missouri's Sunshine Law, and come to find out, he's been the guy fighting me this whole time, and now he's our attorney general in charge of enforcing that law.
Geez, surprise!
How did that happen, you know? But yeah, I mean, he's not supposed to be the attorney for the governor. He is supposed to be the attorney for the people of Missouri. That is his job, and he has chosen not to do it, and you're exactly right. There's a lot of powers, especially in the attorney general's office, that impact us nationwide, not just in Missouri. All these lawsuits we just saw, Missouri was on the one with debt relief. On so many of these situations, they're going to the United States Supreme Court, and we're making national policy from that. So it's definitely something that folks should be paying attention to. Whatever state you're in, these attorneys general are extremely important positions and impact all of us.
You listen to the Rick Smith Show here with Elad Gross. He is a civil rights attorney, government transparency advocate, and leader in the civic engagement arena in Missouri. Check out his website, eladgross.org. We'll get links out on social media how you can find out about that. He is running for attorney general in the state of Missouri. And look, this is one of those things, and you hit on it here a second ago, that you sign on to lawsuits with other states.
Yeah.
You look at what the Republicans have done masterfully. A lot of the social issues, a lot of the transparency issues, they've banded together to shut down. You know, this becomes one of those, I don't like red hat, blue hat so much.
Yeah.
But this is one of those red hat, blue hat scenarios where you got people who are fighting for the people and people who are fighting against them. And sadly, as I say all the time, Republicans hate working people. Look at what they do, and look at what these attorney generals, like the ones in Texas and the one in Missouri, does.
Yeah.
To me, the proof's in the pudding.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, we had, he's now a U.S. senator, but Eric Schmidt was at the U.S. Supreme Court arguing that employers should be able to discriminate against workers. I mean, he literally he lost that case, thank goodness. But our current guy does he's got right on the same argument. It's really unfortunate to see. But like I said, these are very important offices with national implications and all of these kinds of policies.
So we've established they're bad.
Yeah.
We've established they're horrible for working people. And it fits my frame. Republicans hate working people. Look at what they do. How is Elad Gross better? How are you going to do better? What's that hill that you go, this is where I die on?
Yeah.
This is my issue.
Yeah, look, I think I think there are several. I think one is we got to get that office to function for the people again, right? I mean, right now I ask this all the time when I travel a lot around the state. And I ask, look, have you ever had a town hall with your attorney general? Has your attorney ever asked you what you want from your attorney? And nobody's ever had one. Well, the guy doesn't do them. He doesn't care what your input is. He's getting his input from these massive donors who want him to do something for them and not for us. So I'm running for attorney general to sue a whole bunch of scammers, including those who are pretending to govern for us right now. And I think that once we bring accountability back to the state of Missouri, once we bring it back locally, regionally, wherever we can, I think we're going to start seeing folks who want to participate in our government, who understand that, oh, look, It matters that I vote. Like, these people are actually doing something for me. But I think it starts by bringing back accountability however we can. And that includes, unfortunately, prosecuting a lot of the corruption that's taken over our government in Missouri.
So when you're doing these and you're out there actually knocking on doors, kissing babies, doing all that stuff that politicians have to do.
Lots of dogs, yes.
Lots of dogs. You know, hopefully they're not taking any chunks out of you. What are people telling you? I mean, you know, look, you look at what the narrative is of our politics. And the sad reality is you know, we get this outrage candy view.
Yeah.
When you get down and you talk to people one-on-one, because look, you talk to groups of people, you're going to get groupthink. You talk to one-on-one people.
Yes.
They're going to tell you what's personal. So what do you see people, you know, focusing on individually?
Yeah, I think, look, there's quite a bit. I think we talked about some of the issues at the workplace. Everybody's working, right? And they're all experiencing these same kinds of things. But in addition to that, you know, I was in Farmington, Missouri, which is a very red area of our state, and I went to the Country Days Fair, so shout out to the Country Days folks. But when I did, I just, you know, talked to folks and said, what would you like your attorney general to do? And number one was sue the scammers who are calling me on the phone all the time. Please, can we start doing that? And we used to do that. We haven't done that in years from that office, but we used to do that all the time. Two was improve our mental health system. And we've seen in Missouri a lot of defunding of all of these public programs, education, health care, all of these things that they're breaking, and then they're saying, oh, it's broken, so we should totally get rid of it because we broke it. Yeah, exactly right.
I talk about this all the time. Republicans tell us that government doesn't work,
right.
Shouldn't do anything, shouldn't be allowed to do anything, and then they proceed to break things bad enough to go, see, look, we told you it wouldn't work.
Exactly right. Yeah, and that's exactly what we're seeing right now in Missouri. I mean, right now we're spending per student in Missouri less than we were 10 years ago. And they're saying it's a fully funded formula. It's not fully funded. They changed the formula to make sure they could spend less on our kids. And they're making local communities, especially poor ones, suffer because they can't make up the difference. So right now there's a big push in Missouri to privatize public education because they broke public education.
Yeah.
They're trying to break all of these systems so that then they can sell it off to, you know, Betsy DeVos and whatever other big donors they've got coming to the state. And it's just sad to see that we were a state that led on public education. We had the first public kindergarten in the country. We required space for public schools in each of our counties. We required funding for public libraries. Now they're trying to take away funding for libraries in our state. We were massive leaders in education and public services in so many levels, and they've destroyed it. They've ruined it because there are folks with a lot of money who are benefiting from that.
No, conservative ideology, the whole, your war with Kansas, both you and Kansas lost.
Man.
I mean,
yeah. And then look at Kansas now. They're doing better than us. This is really sad for me to even say that. But, yeah, it's happening, man.
No, you guys lost that war. You know, how can we give more to the rich and more to the corporations?
Yeah.
And it screwed your kids and screwed your communities.
Yeah.
So the hope is that you turn that around.
Yeah. Yeah, that's the idea. I mean, the idea is, I think, look, when we're going to the polls and we're voting on issues, we're doing that in Missouri. And I think one of the big reasons, you know, I travel a lot to places where Democrats haven't gone in a long time, and they're not hearing a different perspective. So we're trying to get, I mean, right in your face and say, look, like, these folks are screwing you over. Here's how they're doing it. I've got the numbers. I've got all of this stuff. I'm going to tell you what I stand up for, and I really don't care what they have to say because they are lying to you.
I got to tell you, I like you.
Well, thanks, man. I appreciate this.
It matters.
This has been good.
But I'm hoping that
come to Missouri. You know, we'll bring you in.
See, this is the kind of Democrats that need to come forth and be willing to go into those spaces where you know people disagree with you. Look, I live in one of the reddest areas in the country. I started this program 18 years ago with that exact goal.
Yeah.
We've got to talk to people.
Yes.
Working people want the same things. Working families need the same things, whether you're in a rural or an urban, whether you're in the country somewhere, in the ghetto where I grew up. We want the same things. Good schools for our kids, safe neighborhoods, good jobs, opportunities. Those are what we demand.
Right.
And we're always divided over this nonsense stuff.
Yeah.
So we get back to those issues, we fight on those issues, and hopefully we change hearts and minds. And look, I traveled all across Iowa last year, and every politician I talked to said, you know, talk radio radicalized this state. Iowa used to be a solid, moderate Democratic state.
Yeah.
And now it is rabidly Republican, rabidly insane, to where we're gonna put kids back in slaughterhouses.
I saw, we're working on that too, apparently, now.
So
yeah.
We need folks like you who are going to go in there and say no. So I'm hoping the Show Me State shows me something. Alad Gross, I appreciate you taking some time for us.
Thanks for having me.
I hope folks will check out the website, aladgross.org. We'll get links out on social media. Good luck, brother. I appreciate the time.
Absolutely. Thank you. Thank you for doing this.
Want to hear your thoughts? Email me, rick@therickssmithshow.com. What do you think of our time here at Netroots? You got something on your mind? rick@therickssmithshow.com. Quick break. Right back. Stick around.
I'm Rick Smith, and this is Labor History in Two. On this day in labor history, the year was 1978. That was the day municipal workers in Cleveland, Louisville, and Philadelphia walked off the job. That summer was rocked with public sector strikes, starting with a firefighter strike in Memphis. In Cleveland, municipal services came to a virtual halt as city workers honored a police work stoppage. In Louisville, firefighters walked off the job after the Kentucky Labor Relations Board found the city guilty of unfair labor practices. And in Philadelphia, 20,000 AFSCME members, including sanitation, highway, and health department workers, rejected a last-minute contract offer. They demanded wage increases, but they were also furious when the city announced it would have to lay off city workers to pay an arbitration award to the police. Sanitation strikes soon followed in New Orleans, San Antonio, Detroit, and Tuscaloosa. By the third week of July, transit workers in Washington, D.C. staged a wildcat strike, as did postal workers in California and New Jersey. Labor historian Joseph McCartan notes that public sector strikes peaked in 1975 and again in 1978. By the late 1970s, the volatile recipe of rising public sector union militancy, inflation, and anti-tax reform made public sector unions more vulnerable than at any other time. Suddenly, the union became a convenient scapegoat for public officials dealing with declining relative tax revenues, demands for improved public services, and taxpayer unrest. McCartan adds that by 1978, public employers came out swinging in labor disputes. Public sector unions would struggle to hold their own in an increasingly hostile environment as their ability to strike was being severely eroded. The backlash against public sector militancy set the stage for President Reagan's smashing of the PATCO Union just 3 years later.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So I got to tell you, I like that guy. I do. I get a lot of fire, a lot of passion, and on the right path. I mean, ultimately, you want that attorney general position to be someone, you want that top cop, you want that people's lawyer to be someone who's looking out for working people. You want someone who's going to go after wage theft aggressively. You're going to want someone who's going to go after unsafe working conditions aggressively. You're going to want someone who's going to go after corporate America screwing over consumers. You're going to want that person on your side. And again, this is a, you know, I hate the red hat, blue hat, but in this world where, you know, we're this is where we are, the red hats attorney generals are on the wrong side of every issue, protecting corporate America, protecting, you know, the wealthy and the powerful against, well, we the rabble. And this is one of those things that voting, this is what makes voting so important. Because, you know, this office, I credit Trump and the Trump era with making us more aware of all of those offices and all of those levels of government that we never thought of, that most people forgot about. And what conservatives have done is they've made us keenly aware because, look, their think tanks, their moneyed interests figured out how to hijack our government while convincing us. And this is the brilliance of the Reagan era, convincing us that government's the problem, that government can't, shouldn't, or won't be able to do anything. You talk to the average person, and there's almost a, you know, we've been trained like Pavlovian dogs. We hear the IRS, we foam at the mouth and get angry. Same thing about government. Our government, you know, I know we've been divorced from our government. It's always the government, those. It's us. we were the ones who were instrumental in creating what it is we're being trained to despise. And by voting for good people, people who want to do the right things, who want to use these offices to make people's lives better, who want to make the future better and, well, the now better, we might have a shot. And this is where, again, I give the right credit. This is where the left fell down on the job, maybe, you know, didn't pay attention. But this is where the right understood. I remember when Trump was running in 16, all of the people in line who were going, I don't care about Trump, I care about the Supreme Court. They knew instinctively that this is where the power lies. They were being told by their talking heads, hey, this isn't about any of his flaws. This isn't about any of his bankruptcy. Forget all of that. The prize is the Supreme Court. The prize is all of the positions that he's going to appoint. The prize is the machinery of government that we've trained you to hate. These people hate it too. And these people are going to restrain and use it, you know, not to help you, and certainly not to go after people who are harming you, but going to get the others. So I got to tell you, I'm glad to hear that someone like Elad's in the race. Eladgross.org, the website, if you want to check that out. We need a lot more people at every level, from dog catcher all the way on up. We need more people who are going to throw their hat in the ring and be fire-breathing do-gooders who are going to go out there and fight the good fight. That's what we need. Want to hear your thoughts? Email me, rick@therickSmithShow.com. Miss any portion of the program? Make sure you grab the podcast. Wherever you find your favorite podcast, you'll find ours. Quick break, right back here from Netroots Nation. You're listening to The Rick Smith Show.
I'm Rick Smith, and this is Labor History in Two. On this day in labor history, the year was 1912. That was the day that Woody Guthrie was born in Oklahoma, Oklahoma. Guthrie became one of the most prolific songwriters to ever sing the stories of the working class. His most well-known song is This Land Is Your Land, an anthem whose lyrics claim America for the common man. During the Great Depression, Guthrie traveled from Oklahoma to California with farmers driven off their land by the ravages of the Dust Bowl. He talked with them and learned their stories and songs. He spent the rest of his life singing the songs of those downtrodden. His guitar bore the message, "This machine kills fascists." Guthrie believed in the power of music. His songs serve as a lasting impression for many musicians, from his own son Arlo Guthrie to Bob Dylan, Bruce Springsteen, and many more. Even today, Guthrie's music asks powerful questions about how we as a nation treat workers. In his song Deportees, Guthrie tells the story of migrant Mexican farm workers. His lyrics explain, "We died in your hills, we died in your deserts, we died in your valleys and died in your plains. We died neath your trees, we died in your buses. Both sides of the river, we died just the same." He ends the song by asking, "Is this the best way we can grow our big orchards? Is this the best way we can grow our good fruit?" Like so many of Guthrie's songs, these questions remain unanswered.
You won't have a name when you ride the big airplane. Oh, they will call you, they'll be deportees.
Labor History in Two, brought to you by the Illinois Labor History Society and The Rick Smith Show. For more information, go to laborhistoryin2.com.
About 150 years ago, General Philip Sheridan was sweltering in the relentless heat of a Texas summer. He was not happy. "If I owned Texas and all hell," he groused, "I would rent out Texas and live in hell." Summer has always been hot here, but 2023 has been something else, thanks to a hellish heat dome that has been baking us since late spring, sending daily temps up to 116 degrees. But worse, a more punishing heat has hit us from an even stranger, unnatural dome, the Texas State Capitol. That's where our malicious governor, Greg Abbott, and his GOP majority of extremist right-wing lawmakers rigged the rules to make life easier and richer for corporate elites and much harder for working people. In this year's legislative session, they rammed a nasty piece of plutocratic meanness into law that critics dubbed Death Star.
It annihilates the basic right of local officials and voters to govern their own cities and counties. In particular, it empowers autocratic state officials and even corporate executives to nullify decisions by localities to protect workers and others from corporate abuse. In a cruel case of bad timing, the first local law targeted for nullification by the Texas GOP is a humane requirement in Dallas and other cities that developers provide 10-minute water breaks for construction workers. This in a state with America's highest rate of heat-related deaths and presently suffering biblical-level heat. Triple-digit temperatures kill, yet Abbott, his air-conditioned legislative cronies, and his corporate campaign donors whined that a required water break was, quote, an oppressive burden on the extraordinarily rich construction industry. This is Jim Hightower saying, here's a new rule I'd like to see. No lawmaker or lobbyist is allowed to oppose heat protections for workers unless they spend July and August with no air conditioning for themselves.
You're listening to The Rick Smith Show, where working people come to talk.
So while we're here at Netroots Nation talking about, hey, how are we going to make the future better? How are we going to do things better? Investments, infrastructure, manufacturing, undoing the last 40 years of supply-side voodoo Reaganomics, actually doing some stuff to make lives better. And I got to tell you, as somebody who lives in a rural community, broadband, internet access, get us into the 21st century, or at least into the end of the 20th, maybe? That's all I'm asking for. I don't think it's too much. But that's why I've asked Jeremiah Cleaver to come talk with us. He's the president of CWA Local 7603 out in Idaho. They're out actually doing the work of bringing broadband to places like where I live. Jeremiah, thanks for taking time for us.
Thank you. Thanks for inviting me. It's nice to meet you, Rick.
No, this is important stuff.
Yeah.
The fact that we're actually going to move the entire country into somewhere near the 21st century, I think is really important.
Oh, I agree. I grew up also in rural Idaho up in the mountains. It is 8 miles to the closest town from my house, you know, and this is something that's become an extreme passion of mine, is bringing that area to where people can live and work and function. Internet has become an essential utility for life and work.
No, and this is why I've always said I think it should be a utility, but that's a fight for another day, I'm sure. Yeah. But getting things wired up, I mean, this is like the electrification era of the Truman years.
Yeah.
That we're bringing this necessity to people's homes all across the country, regardless of where you live. You should have access to something that's going to bring you, like I said, into the 20th century or the 21st century or somewhere close.
Mm-hmm. No, and it's also, you know, in the state of Idaho, it's an extremely red state. And, you know, I've navigated and I've found these issues are across aisle issue. It's agreed on both sides.
No, I'm a Republican.
That's true.
I want dial-up.
Yeah. No, that's...
Please bring AOL back.
The biggest thing I hear, the realtors at the State House in Idaho, is the very first question they get asked from someone looking to move into town or from out of state is, what kind of service can I get? Because they can't work or function unless they can get broadband. So it's hurting people on both sides of the aisle.
Yeah.
You know, companies and labor and everybody. Not having this with the new telehealth issues and, you know, all the stuff that's out there, it just helps everybody function and live.
No, and look, yeah. I'm a huge supporter.
Yeah.
Have been a huge supporter. Had Donald Trump said this is what we were going to do, I just supported him.
Yeah.
Because it's a necessity. It's what we should have been doing. It should have been done years ago.
Yes.
I would have preferred it to be a utility and viewed a bit differently, but that's another thing. So the other part of this is not just bringing consumers and citizens into the 21st century, which I'm glad we're doing, but it's about the jobs that's being created. I mean, you guys, I know CWA represents a lot of Verizon workers, a lot of AT&T workers, a lot of people who are going to be doing this work, earning good wages, benefits, good working conditions. That's an important thing for our economy and for our country.
Oh, I agree, and I'm actually what they call Baby Bell. So my father had 34 years at the ILEC phone company. I've now got 25 years working for the ILEC, which is a pre-96 telephone company, the Bells. And my son he's 19, he's a fiber optic splicer also for a contract company right now. But there's a lot of work and there's a lot of jobs that are out there. The biggest issue I'm starting to see coming in is the lack of training, the lack of safety, you know. and people putting their lives in danger. Idaho had four people die in trench collapses last year. One of them was a 19-year-old kid that just got out of lineman school that leaned over in a four-foot trench and it collapsed. These are all preventable, easily preventable things, and there's no reason for anyone to ever die doing their job.
No, and this is where, again, I keep coming back to, as a union guy, you know, you're trained to know what the dangers are.
Yes.
You're empowered to not put yourself in that dangerous position.
Yes.
So, you know, I get, you know, because I've had some people who say, well, the boss, you know, said, you know, I had to do it, and, you know, gave me a bunch of pressure, you know, that kind of stuff. In a union environment, that's not how it is. You're empowered to say, I'm going to be safe because I want to go home to my family at the end of the day.
Yeah, no, and I push that even with my son. Everybody is, there's not a single paycheck anywhere. There's not an amount of money that's worth putting your life at risk and dying. Because, you know, in Idaho, we've got it put in that anyone takes federal money, they have to pay federal prevailing wages, Davis-Bacon. And I said, well, that's great, but it's not going to do them much good if they're all dead because they fall off of telephone poles or go into confined spaces and, you know, get asphyxiated or die. You know?
So Idaho hasn't destroyed prevailing wage yet?
We just put it in. We put it in the guidelines for anyone that takes any of the ARPA or CPF funds right now that if they take over $200,000, they have to pay federal prevailing wage, Davis-Bacon, for everybody from the company clear through the contractors.
That's outstanding.
Yes.
Because, again, you know, the kind of jobs that are being created, you want to make sure that they're actually supporting families. They're actually, you know, doing something to help local communities. Because I argue prevailing wage is really, while it does help the worker, it's really the community that benefits as a whole.
Yeah, and that's the state actually agreed that when we spoke, I said this money is not just to build the infrastructure. It's to build a trained workforce and to bring the wages and the money into Idaho. And it doesn't do any good if you give the money to the corporations and it leaves the state immediately.
Excellent point.
If you give it to the workers, they're going to spend it in their state, their towns. It's going to build up that economy where they're at.
No, and again, that's the argument I make all the time. You're listening to The Rick Smith Show. We're at Jeremiah Cleaver. He's president of CWA Local 7603 out in Idaho. We're talking about bringing America into the 21st century, building broadband better. I guess that's kind of your tagline. We're going to bring people into the 21st century, kicking and screaming whether they want to or not.
Well, and building it better is the... Our concept is building it with a union workforce where we are trained and we are trained to do it correctly. I'm sure every state, every area has seen it. Idaho went through it. My company hired a somewhat subpar contractor when they first started years ago, and they were there for about a year, and I spent almost 3 years following up and fixing everything they had touched. And the downside with fiber optic cable is there's a lot of times you can't just get in there and fix it. So now you're replacing entire sections of phone cable to be able to fix that splice that they messed up.
You need good qualified people, and you need people who are going to be trained. And this is an opportunity for unions like CWA to have apprenticeship programs, to bring people in, to train them the right way, not the, hey, let's get it done as quick as possible so we can cash the check, but actually doing the job right.
Yeah, no, I agree. That's something I've been working on in Idaho, you know, and I'm truly impressed. I've had a lot of support from other companies. There's a massive workforce shortage in the United States that we're going to run into, and people haven't really looked at that pitfall that's coming up. So I was talking to the commissioner in Idaho, or broadband manager is what they're calling them now. But I said, we've been pulling people from out of state to do a lot of this work when it comes up in the bigger projects. The problem is every state's getting this money.
Right.
So all the workers, everyone we've been relying on pulling in, they're gone. And I said, you know, I believe Fierce Telecom did an article the other day or a couple months ago about the shortage of workforce. And it's a high-wage workforce. My son's a non-union splicer right now. He's trying to get on at the telco, but he's 19 years old and makes, I think, $32 an hour.
Wow.
You know, which for Idaho, that's a huge wage.
That is a huge wage. Yeah. I got a kid. He's going to be 18 soon. Yeah. How do we get him into that? Because that's the future, isn't it?
Yes.
I mean, I think you're about my age. I'm 56. We were told you got to go to college. You got to get a degree. The path to the middle class is put on a white shirt and a tie and try and get a corner office and shuffle some paper and look busy kind of thing. Mm-hmm. That, you know, work was bad. You know, if you worked with your hand, you were a failure. Mm-hmm. I think we're now coming back around to the, we need skilled craftspeople. Yeah. We need people who can, you know, take a piece of metal and turn it into something, a piece of wood that it can turn, or, you know, wires and put them together properly.
And I was lucky, I should say. I grew up in the hills on a hobby farm. My father worked at the telco, but my mother, she actually has her PhD in adult education and worked for the college system in Idaho for 20 plus years, you know, and did this stuff. And so they drove me in, and education was very important to my family. I started with my grandfather, never finished high school, and he worked in the sawmills his entire life, from 14, clear till he retired. But I drove into the only Catholic high school every day. It was an hour and 20-minute drive to go to school every day, each way. And I saw both sides, and I had the opportunities to have scholarships and go to college. I opted to go the route of my father, and in the end, I actually made more than my mother, who had her PhD, you know.
And that's a story that's got to be told repeatedly.
Yes.
Because the plumber that came to my house and just fixed the tank that we needed while I was gone, that wasn't cheap.
Yeah, no.
He did a really good day's work there and earned a good day's pay for it. And I think we've got to re-educate people in that view that, you know, there's nothing wrong with people who work for a living. We don't, if you took a shower at the end of the day, you're still as good as that other person.
Yeah, and almost every person I work with at the phone company and my work crew, I guess there's a handful of us, but they almost all have a higher education degree, but they opt to stay and work at the telephone company because they feel safe. They know that they can retire. They have a way to provide for their families at the end, you know, at the end of their career, you know. I'm 46 and I can retire in 5 years.
Wow.
Because, you know, I started when I was young, and I've got a full pension and a 401k, you know, and that stuff. And it's unheard of now, you know, in this day and age, even at a lot of other shops, to have a pension and a 401k. I go to do new hire classes and it blows me away. One of the first questions I ask is all the kids is, how many of you know the difference between a 401k and a pension? And I just get met with the deer in the headlight looks.
Well, isn't that the same?
Yeah. You know, they don't understand. I simplify it, and it's oversimplified. I say the pensions, they pay me not to come to work. A 401k is I save my own money so I don't come to work.
Right.
You know.
No, and we've got to educate young people on that. Because a lot of the jobs in manufacturing, a lot of the jobs in the skilled trades, they come with those things because the unions fight for them.
Yes.
And for me, you know, I think back to that, my grandparents' generation, mm-hmm. you know, who went off and fought fascism overseas only to come home and fight it on the shop floor. Mm-hmm. And ultimately built the most prosperous working class in history.
Yes.
That they were able to work their lives and live their lives out with dignity in retirement. Yeah. And I think that's what we all want, right?
Yeah, oh yeah. No, and it gives you I tell people, the union is not just about a prevailing wage. That's or a living wage. That's a really important part. But I have the option and the ability to walk into my state director's office or any manager's office and say, this is not right.
And
we need to get this fixed. And I try to work with them hand in hand. You know, I tell them all the time, I have a lot of friends. I don't need new friends. The way this meeting goes was up to you, you know. But there's some issues. And it may be a gripe or it may be a grievance, but let's sit down and work this out so that we don't have further issues. And, you know, same goal in mind. Everyone's happier if you can work together and come to a resolution. You know, being in the union, it doesn't have to be a constant battle ramming your head in the wall. You know, they happen. You know, I work with the airports and different work groups, and I've had blow-ups, and even some of the managers that I consider to be friends, we understand it's going to be a blow-up, and we just don't take it personally because everyone has their own point of view. But I also tell them, you're not going to mess with my workers or their safety and, you know, put them in danger.
No, that we need, you know, that. We need people who are going to stand up for folks in the workplace. And again, I keep saying, the way we move forward in this country, organize our workplaces.
Yeah.
I do want to get back to why we sat down originally, because this is great. I mean, this is important. But the broadband stuff, I mean, this is a big freaking deal.
It's in my opinion, this is one of the biggest things that's happened in this nation in generations, you know. And even the legislators in Idaho, they all say this is, anyone that works on this at the state level, legislative-wise, their name's going to be etched in the history of Idaho. And they don't want their name tied to something that's a piece of garbage.
Yep. No, you know? And I go, look, Biden did this. I think there should be a 20-foot statue at every one of these places going, I did that.
Yeah.
You know, like those idiots slapping that stuff on gas pumps. This is Biden's legacy.
Yeah, no, I went to Idaho City, which is a town way up in the mountains, and it's I grew up in Boise County, so it's been a little niche of mine that I feel for these people because I grew up in that area. And, you know, it's an hour drive north of Boise up in the mountains, a town, you know, maybe 1,000 people, and they're getting fiber optic to their homes. You know, they're going to have better service than the people that live in Boise, the capital now, because they're going to have 10 gig bidirectional.
Wow.
You know. And who would ever thought you're driving up there and most people live on dirt roads and they're going to have the ability to have 10 gigabyte up and down at their house because of these programs, you know. And
10 gigabyte.
Yeah, which I always laugh.
Hold on. Yeah. 10 gigabyte.
Lumen's new service that we're going to be offering is 10 gigabyte up and down.
And what's that going to cost?
$70 a month.
I'm moving to Idaho.
Yeah.
You know what? I got 1 gig. I got 1 gig.
Yeah.
1 gig. One, on the business side.
Yeah.
And $380 a month.
Wow. Lumen's new price structure with the ACP program, the Affordable Connectivity, is now, I was talking to Government Affairs, and they're offering anything 200 meg bidirectional below is $30 a month, and anything 200 bidirectional and up is $70 a month, flat. That's our price structure where I work now. And I think it's amazing they did that. So if you get the ACP program, you can have free service at 200 meg bidirectional that's provided by the federal government through the ACP program now.
So if you're low income, we're going to make sure that you know poor people get this too.
Yes. No.
Because I think that's even more important that we make sure that everyone gets it.
Everyone has access. The next issue I've been working on in Idaho is the education portion to make sure that people can have access and they know how to use it. And so I've been meeting with the libraries.
Good luck on that.
Yeah, no, and that's where it's funny. Everyone says, maybe we could do some recorded training. I go, if they don't know how to turn the machine on, they can't get to the internet meetings.
So you say you're going to do it in libraries? Well, did you know there's a movement to close down all the libraries?
I do. There's a huge movement in Idaho to do censorship and do all this stuff. And, you know, I try to stay out of that because I get too many tasks going myself, you know, with being a I actually literally work as a line repairman 4 days a week, and I do union work 1 day a week usually and work on all this other stuff. And I've been shifting more to have to take more time to do this. But, the library things, my wife is a school teacher and works with at-risk kids.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's a big deal.
Well, good on you for the work that you do. I mean, it's so important that we get, I mean, this is historic. I mean, this is I go back to the Biden thing. This is a big freaking deal.
Yeah.
And you're right there on the front of it. Yeah. Folks wanted to get more information. Where would they go to find out more about what you do and more about the ACP program?
Well, and you can look up the Broadband Brigade. I wish I had a card. We have a pamphlet here, and we've got signatures we're raising to send to all the governors in every state and everything, but I'm not sure.
We'll get
one, and maybe you can post it. But that would take you to our petition and our sites. And then you can go to, I believe it was, I had a piece of paper also, the fcc.org/ACP, I believe is the website. And that's for the Affordable Connectivity Program that's out there also. And like I said, it's historic. There's money to help the people that are lower income and, you know, elderly. There's money, you know, Idaho is a huge refugee town. And a lot of those people don't speak English. There's assistance for them to get it, you know, interpreters and that stuff to help them. And I'm just flabbergasted with everything that's happened in the last few years. To go from the Trump era to where we are now is just amazing to me.
Again, I give Biden credit. Yeah. I wish he would take more of it, but I'm going to give it to him. So, but Jeremiah, I appreciate you taking some time for us. Keep up the great work, and I hope we'll talk to you again real soon.
I appreciate it. Thank you for talking with me, sir.
Yep. Thanks so much, Jeremiah Cleaver. He's the president of CWA Local 7603 out in Idaho. I got to tell you, this, as I said, big, big freaking deal. Want to hear your thoughts? Email me, rick@thericksmithshow.com. How much do you pay for internet? I know I pay a lot. Would this be helpful? I can't wait. Back after this.
I'm Rick Smith, and this is Labor History in 2. On this day in labor history, the year was 1877. That was the day that would become known as the Great Upheaval, or the Great Uprising, which began in Martinsburg, West Virginia. Railroad workers were angry. They had seen their wages cut twice in 6 months by the Baltimore and Ohio Railroad. the workers went on strike, refusing to let the trains move. 600 trains jammed the rail yard, and soon the strike spread to Baltimore. When the Maryland governor called out the National Guard, workers in the city rose up and attacked them. The guardsmen fired on the crowd, killing 10 people. The strike continued to spread to Pittsburgh, Chicago, and East St. Louis. More than 100,000 workers stopped working. This was not an organized strike by a central labor union, but rather a popular revolt by workers fed up with their wages and working conditions. Everywhere the workers went on strike, they were met with armed troops. Workers, police, and guardsmen were at battle. Workers tore up railroad tracks and burnt railroad buildings. The chairman of the Pennsylvania Railroad voiced his opinion that those on strike should be given, quote, a rifle diet for a few days and see how they like that kind of bread. In Chicago, thousands of workers clashed with police in what came to be known as the Battle of Viaduct. In all, more than 100 workers lost their lives across the country. The events of the summer of 1877 were a turning point in U.S. labor history. Industrialists became convinced that they needed an armed response to labor uprisings. The violence of 1877 forewarned the bloody conflict of labor versus capital that would continue over the decades to follow across the United States. Labor History in 2 brought to you by the Illinois Labor History Society and The Rick Smith Show. For more information, go to laborhistoryin2.com, like us on Facebook, and follow us on the Twitters at laborhistoryin2.
Are you tired of think tank approved corporate news and commentary? Are you tired of CEOs telling you what to think, who to hate, and who to vote for? Well, welcome to the Rick Smith Show. We don't take orders from some boardroom, and we don't do focus groups or talking points. We don't work for them, and we never will. I'm Rick Smith, and I work for you. Join us daily at thericksmithshow.com and download the podcast and never miss a minute.
Welcome back to The Rick Smith Show. Check out our website, thericksmithshow.com, as we wrap up our day two coverage of Netroots Nation. Hope you've enjoyed what we've brought forth so far. I've got to tell you, today, the interview with Keith Ellison, you know, has got me thinking, along with, you know, some of the other folks, the prosecutors. And I go back to what we talked about earlier, the idea that Trump did bring some awareness to lower offices. And I hope, you know, as we look around the exhibit hall here, you know, what used to be a lot of activist groups coming forward and doing displays, it's a lot of political, you know, machinery. It's the kind of stuff that the right built 30 years ago. But it's now talking about, hey, how do we win campaigns? How do we change things through politics? It's not just the activism for activism's sake. It's, you know, how do we stay politically involved? And I go back to, you know, probably 20 years ago, I was arguing with labor leaders back then going, you know, why is it we ramp up 2 months before an election? And it's, you know, labor, you know, 2020 or labor 2022, or, and you have this kind of this growth and this activism and this stuff going on just before election, two months, three maybe. Whereas the right has been doing this stuff 24/7. 365 year after year, it's a constant campaign. And I'm seeing that finally, you know, the left is finally picking up on that it is. It's all about constant engagement. It's all about constant information, constantly, you know, getting out and talking with people. And look, I'm hopeful where we're heading is going to bear fruit, because, you know, as we talked earlier with Keith Ellison, the attorney general from Minnesota, there are lower offices that mean things. And that's the one thing, again, I give Donald Trump credit for. The right had been building that for years. The right had been building on this idea that, you know, we're gonna make government the enemy, but we're going to take it over. And we're going to run it our way. And their way has been enrich the handful, give more power to corporations, and, well, screw the people on the bottom. And the people in this room and people who have come to this conference, they're the ones at the bottom of the hill. And they've had enough. You know, so in talking with Keith Ellison, and look, if we had attorney generals in every state that were willing to take on the Federal Trade Commission and fight every single, move towards consolidation and monopoly. If we had attorneys generals who were out there saying, you know what, we're going to go after the powerful. We're going to go after the wage thieves. We're going to go after the people who are cheating on, you name it, you know, unemployment, workers' comp, you know, taxes. I mean, if we had those kind of fire-breathing do-gooders in those kind of offices, maybe we're a different place. Maybe the anger isn't what it is right now. Maybe the idea that we can work hard, play by the rules to get ahead, maybe that becomes the way forward. And, you know, in talking with Keith Ellison and, you know, some of the other folks who are running for office, this idea that we can use government to make lives better is not a new idea, but it's a new era for the new for that idea. My grandparents' generation believed it. We can too. The idea that we use government procurement to ensure that we get good jobs, that we get positive outcomes, that we get the investments that we need. And look, we talked with, you know, someone who's saying, look, you know, we're gonna bring broadband to rural Idaho. And we're gonna get those people in rural Idaho better bandwidth, better